Did you know that more than 113,000 children are waiting to be adopted from foster care? Ellie was one of them. When she was placed in foster care at 16 after experiencing significant abuse, she felt unlovable. Thankfully, Ellie was adopted with help from the Dave Thomas Foundation for Adoption. Today, she's planning on college and has a bright future. But more than 20,000 teens age out of care every year. You can help. Visit DaveThomasFoundation.org/learn more.
Today, Rachel and I have been going back and forth getting our questions ready to send to FDA, and I cannot believe that we are still asking the same questions after nearly a week. Hit send.
I sent an email to FDA with more questions. It looks like I got a bounce back, so I am just going to kind of share all these questions really widely and let Lena know the status of that.
Oh, great.
Lena Sun and Rachel Rubin are health reporters for The Post. And for weeks, they've been sending questions to agencies like the Food and Drug Administration because there is a new outbreak of bird flu.
We're trying to figure out what we know and what we don't know and try to answer the really, really basic question in this novel outbreak.
A few weeks ago, a vet in Texas discovered the first ever case of bird flu in a cow. And then scientists identified the first human case from a cow. So Lena and Rachel teamed up to investigate. They've been regularly meeting in a pretty visible spot in the newsroom.
And we're just sitting in a kind of glass huddle office room.
That has a whiteboard.
Lena has kindly drawn this big diagram.
They've been taking notes on the new bird flu outbreak on a whiteboard that, to me, sort of looks like the board from the movie A Beautiful Mind, except for the bird flu. It's covered in arrows and scribbles. There's even a drawing of a cow.
It's supposed to be a Holstein cow. When I first drew the cow, I only had a green marker. And then I looked at a picture of a cow, I'm like, oh, I need to put the black spots on.
Then Lena realized she used permanent marker.
Now you understand why I did not go into painting as a profession.
Meanwhile, their colleagues like me have been poking their heads into this room, asking Lena and Rachel, how worried should I be about the bird flu? Is it okay to drink milk? Now, after weeks of reporting, Lena and Rachel are learning more from the FDA and other agencies about this outbreak. From the newsroom of The Washington Post, this is Post Reports. I'm Elahe Izadi. It's Monday, April 29th. Today, Lena shares the latest on what we know about bird flu, how federal agencies are responding, and what precautions we can take to stay healthy. Okay, Lena, I'm really glad you're here to talk to me because I really just want to cut to the chase. Should I be worried about bird flu right now? And you are the person I want to ask this question of.
Right now, the risk to the general public is indeed low. I think a lot of people are very freaked out because we have reported that bird flu is in cows, and we have reported that they have now found tiny pieces or pieces of the virus in pasteurized milk on the grocery store shelves. I would not be that worried. I'm not that worried about the milk part, but I'm a little bit more worried that it seems that the virus is spreading among cows in ways that government officials haven't been able to monitor as closely. And the worry there is the more the virus can do its thing, replicate in animals, and the more animals it can replicate in, the greater the chance the virus has a chance to mutate and change to become more easily spread in humans. And then human-to-human transmission, if it's sustained, that's really the building blocks of the next pandemic.
So was there a moment that prompted you and your colleague to start reporting more urgently on this outbreak of bird flu? What was the red flag that was raised for you?
The first tiny little flag was when they reported that bird flu had jumped into cows.
It's a new twist in the spread of H5N1 bird flu.
The safety alert is in place after some Texas dairy cows tested positive for the bird flu.
That confirmation was announced by Texas Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller yesterday.
And that was back on March 25th.
Experts add the infected animals are exhibiting flu-like or cold-like symptoms.
It's the first time it's jumped into a cow. So the people who follow these kinds of things, the epidemiologists, when they saw that, they sat up and took notice. And then we had news that one person had been infected.
Texas health officials say for the first time in the U.S., a human has contracted the bird flu from a dairy cow.
And the person had direct contact with a cow.
The individual had contact with dairy cattle in Texas and only had mild symptoms.
So that really put us into, okay, let's figure out what's going on here. How is it spreading? What are the risks to people? The FDA and other agencies said right at the start that milk was safe because pasteurization, which is heating it at high temperatures for a certain amount of time, kills the bad stuff and has killed other bad stuff like this virus.
Yeah, I want to learn more about what happens to humans if they were to get bird flu and just more ins and outs. But just first of all, I mean, bird flu is something I've heard about before. It's been in the news before over the years. Can you just remind us what exactly bird flu is?
Bird flu is a type of avian influenza. And actually, the world has known about H5N1, this particular bird flu, for years.
It was first reported in China in 1996. It's a type of influenza virus, one that causes severe respiratory diseases in birds.
It has spread mostly in wild birds, to poultry, to other domesticated flocks. But this version of bird flu has spread to many other mammalian species, squirrels and skunks, bobcats, polar bears, seals, and in 2022, bird flu here really hit the poultry industry. And you remember when egg prices went up because it's highly fatal in poultry.
Bird flu continues to threaten the chicken population across the country. Since 2022, it's estimated more than 90 million birds have either died from the virus in the U.S. or were killed to prevent further spread.
Since 2003, on the human side, about 900 cases of infections in humans have been reported, according to the World Health Organization, and about half of those cases have resulted in death. Many of those are instances where people had contact with dead birds. I remember there was a case in Cambodia.
Health workers in Cambodia disinfected a home in the country's south after a girl who lived there died from so-called bird flu.
But what happens, usually, you know, we only know about the most severe cases. So jumping to this outbreak, the person who was infected with H5N1 in this outbreak, this version of it, didn't get very sick. The person had eye redness, which is consistent with mild flu-like symptoms.
Okay, so Lena, going back to this recent cattle outbreak in the U.S., can you remind me where this started and where in the country has it spread so far?
The first herd was in Texas. The first person who got sick was in Texas. That person has since recovered, and no contacts in that person's household became sick. Those people were tested, and we don't have any additional reports of illness.
And so where else have they found bird flu in dairy cows?
They found it in at least 33 herds in at least 8 states. That includes Idaho, Texas, Kansas, South Dakota, New Mexico, Michigan.
So, Lena, I feel like so much of talking about infectious diseases is almost like you're trying to be a detective and figure out how did this happen and what's going to happen next. So I'm wondering, what do you know about how the bird flu jumped to cows. What do we know about how this happened?
The whole key and success to any outbreak control is to know how it started and how it's spreading. I think there's a fair amount of agreement that it started with wild birds who were infected with bird flu and infected this first cattle herd. We don't know how that happened. You know, if the cows somehow came in contact with the bird, touched it, or feces, we don't know. But it's pretty much from the wild bird to the cattle. Among the cattle is what is really critical to know. Is it spreading through respiratory means? The early evidence and growing evidence suggests, according to USDA, that the virus is spreading cow to cow through mechanical means, like maybe the milking equipment, or possibly, one of the officials said this the other day at a press conference, if you had a rat in the barn and the rat was drinking the milk and then went to another cow and touched it, some on like surface that way, instead of respiratory, because they found most of the virus is in mammary tissue, in the milk, in the udders. So you're going to ask me, well, what happens to a cow when it gets sick with H5N1? They noticed that there's decreased milk production, and the cow's milk is like thick and kind of discolored. And maybe the cow is not moving as well. Sorry.
I was waiting for you to moo, Lena.
Sorry.
Never apologize for puns here.
So that is key to everything. If they know how the virus is spreading among cows, then they can figure out, okay, what does this mean, the risk of exposure to humans? Right now, they know that when a cow gets sick, it takes about a week to 10 days for it to recover. And the cows have not been getting severely ill. So in that time, we don't know how long the virus stays in the cow's milk. We don't know how long after the cow has recovered, whether it's still shedding virus, right? Because then that could pose a risk to workers. And all of that factors into what kind of guidance you should give to people who are in contact, who are working with the cows, not just on the farms, but at the processing plants where the milk gets sent. Mm-hmm. The latest development seems that they did find virus in the lung tissue of a cow that was not showing any symptoms. And that cow had been moved from an infected herd to another herd. They're trying to tease out, it seems to suggest that this virus can be spread even when the cow is not showing symptoms of sickness. And that is why USDA recently issued an order to the dairy farms and said, farmers have to test any cows, lactating cows, before those cows can be moved across state lines. And the cows have to test negative before they can be moved. You know, the dairy farms that produce the cows that make the milk that we drink, they're private. And you can't just go in and say, we want to test all your cows. It's voluntary. And those dairy farmers, you know, you don't want to be known as a farm that has a herd of infected cows. That's not good for business. And also, that is not good for all the workers who are on that farm, who take care of the cows, who make sure that the cows don't get sick, who milk the cows, put that milk into processing plants. It's not just the business side. It's all these other people who are exposed.
After the break, how we can protect ourselves. And is it safe to drink milk? We'll be right back.
On a summer night, Douglas Wag Jr. lay motionless across a strip of railroad tracks before being struck by an oncoming train. I'm investigative journalist Delia D'Ambra, and my investigation into exactly how Doug died took me into the depths of a bizarre mystery.
It was really hard to understand what was fact and what wasn't.
A mystery that has led me from one suspicious death to another. Listen to Counterclock now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
So, Lena, you mentioned, okay, I don't need to be so worried about milk because it's pasteurized and that process will kill the virus. But also, I've read and heard that there are elements of bird flu in grocery store milk. Can you tell me about that? What did you find out about this?
Well, Rachel and I spent quite a lot of time trying to get the FDA to tell us whether they were testing milk on grocery store shelves, pasteurized milk, to validate whether pasteurization does indeed kill this virus, as the agency has said. So you have to remember, they've never had H5N1 in cows. Therefore, they've never had H5N1 virus in pasteurized milk, right? So when this happened, they didn't have any studies showing, oh, look, pasteurization kills this particular virus.
Wait, they just assumed that that process would kill that particular virus?
Correct, because this is a virus. It's a certain kind of virus that is heat sensitive. It's an RNA virus. And there have been lots and lots of studies that show pasteurization kills similar kinds of viruses. Also, pasteurization kills this virus in eggs, and that's at a much lower temperature. So the science, the data indicates that pasteurization would kill this guy too. But now they are doing additional tests to doubly make sure, to validate that pasteurization does kill this virus. In that process, they have been taking samples from grocery store shelves. And we reported that they had found fragments of the virus in pasteurized milk, milk on the shelves. That test does not tell you whether the virus is active and infectious. It just tells you there's virus fragments. Think back to the pandemic. Remember when you got sick and you recovered, you were told not to take the PCR test because the PCR test could find pieces of virus even though you were all better, because that virus is probably, the virus is dead. It's the same kind of test that they're using for the milk to look for H5N1. It will detect evidence of virus, the fragments, pieces. But in order to show that this virus is live and able to infect you and harm you, you have to take the virus and grow it up in culture. You have to see if it grows. If it grows, not good. Initial early tests by the NIH show that in a small sample of grocery store milk where they found viral fragments, they weren't able to grow it up. In other words, the virus, it be dead.
I mean, do you have any questions left around the fragments in the milk that leave you wondering, you know, how widespread is this thing? Is that more of what the fact that there's fragments of bird flu virus in grocery store milk? Is that really what it tells you, that it might be more widespread than we think it is?
Exactly. Because cows who are sick and therefore have H5N1 in their milk, that milk is supposed to be discarded and dumped. It's not supposed to be sent to the pasteurization plants. Okay? It's supposed to be, you know, not in there. So the fact that They have now found viral fragments in 1 out of 5 samples of grocery store milk. Shows that this is more widespread than we previously thought.
Lena, as a human being, how does one keep themselves safe from contracting this virus?
Well, for most of us, I think it would come down to not to touch wild birds or dead animals. If you come into contact with them, don't go pick them up or check them out, or you know, call the right people to get rid of the dead animals, and not drinking raw milk or eating products made with raw milk. So that's cheeses and any other things.
Yeah.
For the workers on the farms, or workers who are in contact with cows in this whole outbreak, the CDC has a very extensive list of recommendations about what you should be wearing: masks, gloves, gowns. When they enter buildings where there are animals that on infected herds, it's quite a lengthy list of the kind of protection you need to have. And a lot of it involves PPE, that stuff that was so familiar to us during the pandemic.
So you had mentioned that some of the symptoms for people, if they were to get H5N1, are there any other symptoms we should be aware about?
So, you know, this person who got sick was monitored for flu-like symptoms. So we've all had flu, right? And it would be those kinds of flu-like symptoms: fever, cough, respiratory, eye redness, muscle aches. And luckily, this person only had the eye inflammation, conjunctivitis. And the CDC has all sorts of surveillance to check for flu in people, human flu, all year round. And then they can pick up when the tests go to the labs to detect influenza A. H5N1 is a type of influenza A. And they have also data from emergency rooms that check when people come in and complain of certain kind of symptoms, things that might flag for them. So up until now, all these ongoing surveillance systems have not detected anything unusual, especially in the areas where there have been reports of infected cows.
Hmm. And is there any treatment? Are there any vaccines for bird flu?
The CDC has said that the antiviral therapeutics that we have now, Tamiflu and other things, appear to be effective against this strain of bird flu, so that if you got sick, that it would help. Antivirals don't prevent. They just make you feel less sick. Well, also, they could prevent you from getting sicker, sorry. And the folks who manage our government stockpiles say we have lots of Tamiflu. There is enough if, in the event, worst case scenario, that this thing gets bigger. There are also building blocks for a vaccine against H5N1, this strain of H5N1 in people, that government officials say could be geared up fairly quickly. There's a portion, hundreds of thousands of doses that could be distributed. And then if we needed to ramp up even more, they could basically defrost the components and make up more vaccine, and that would take longer. But they could probably get out 100 million doses in a couple of months.
What has been the response from the FDA and other government agencies to this outbreak?
Everybody's response has been that the agencies are working urgently, and I think that work is happening behind the scenes, but it might not be as fast as some would like. You know, we don't know what is not measured. And if we don't have a good metric of what's measured, it's hard to come up with guidance and protection for the people most at risk, that being the farm workers. So on the one side, government agencies in the U.S. say they are working as fast as possible. They're trying to do this without stoking alarm, but also providing information. I think there is more criticism directed at the lack of faster testing and broader testing in the animals.
Yeah, you know, Lena, hearing you talk through everything, I do feel less freaked out than when we start than from when we started this conversation. But also, you know, maybe I'm not freaked out about, oh, I'll get bird flu from drinking milk from the grocery store. But now I'm wondering, oh, if it's not this virus, you know, whatever the next thing is going to be, next pandemic is going to be. And, you know, again, we're not saying this is going to turn into a pandemic. I'm just wondering, in your reporting around our response to bird flu and how this is all playing out, what your assessment is about our readiness to confront the next pandemic, no matter what the virus is. What does this story around bird flu tell us about that?
I think that it tells us that even when we know the U.S. government has bird flu, has avian influenza on its radar of top causes of the next pandemic for like 20 years. People have always known that influenza could be the next pandemic. So that's why they were surprised by SARS-CoV-2. And also, after the pandemic, state health departments were gutted. There's burnout among healthcare workers, and there is so much distrust of government and science that I wonder, even if we did all those things and had the right testing and controlled it in time and came up with a vaccine, in the event that it got there, would people even take the vaccine because they don't trust the government?
Yeah, so much has changed since the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yes.
Well, Lena, thank you so much for joining and just explaining all of this to me.
Okay, you're welcome.
Lena Sun is a national health reporter covering infectious disease for The Post. There are a couple of other stories I'm paying attention to today. There appears to be a proposed deal for a 40-day ceasefire in Gaza. The deal could include the release of Israeli hostages held in Gaza and thousands of Palestinians in Israel. At the World Economic Forum on Monday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken called on Hamas to accept the deal.
And in this moment, the only thing standing between the people of Gaza and a ceasefire is Hamas. They have to decide, and they have to decide quickly.
There's growing international pressure to come to an agreement. Israel is planning a major assault in southern Gaza on Rafah, which Israel says is a remaining stronghold for Hamas. More than 1 million civilians have sought refuge there. A Hamas official said the group was examining a ceasefire proposal. And then there's a more lighthearted story I'm following. Hear that noise? It's the sound of cicadas in Newberry County, South Carolina. Right now, billions of cicadas are emerging across the Southeast and Midwest after spending more than a decade underground. They're so loud that people in Newberry County are calling the sheriff's department, reporting that they're hearing what they thought were burglar alarms or warning sirens. The noise is especially loud this year because two broods of cicadas are emerging at the same time. This is the first time that this has happened since 1803. So if you happen to hear a loud buzzing noise in your neighborhood, keep an eye out for these red-eyed bugs. And hey, look up some cicada recipes if you're feeling especially adventurous. That's it for Post Reports. Thanks for listening. Today's show was produced by Alana Gordon. It was mixed by Sean Carter and edited by Lucy Perkins. Thanks also to Rachel Rubine and Tracy Jan. If you're looking for the latest updates on the big news of the day, you should check out our morning news briefing. It's called The 7, and we bring you the 7 stories you need to know about every weekday morning by 7 a.m. It's such a great and quick way to catch up before you start your day. You can listen to it wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Elahe Izadi. We'll be back tomorrow with more stories from The Washington Post.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, There's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from the Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow the Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.